From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Happy Tuesday. Boy, we have a great show in store for you all as we will be diving into, of course, the Michigan concussion discussion as Dave Brandon decided to release a press release concerning the whole ordeal at around 1 a.m. I kid you not, folks. 1 a.m. this thing is released. It has caused a lot of uproar and chatter nationally, not just here in Michigan. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the Detroit Lions and Ndamukong Suh deciding to possibly take his talents elsewhere after this season. And Joseph Fourier with a pretty hilarious injury. The only injury that's hilarious for the Lions, but it's pretty funny how it happened. We'll chat about that. And also Manny Pacquiao had some interesting comments concerning Floyd Money Mayweather. All of that and so much more, but hey, as custom here on the show, here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this, the last day of September, September 30th, 2014. Here they are. All right, Michigan Athletic Director Dave Brandon issued a formal apology concerning the Shane Morris concussion. Brandon did so in a press release that was issued around 1 a.m. He said the reason for Shane Morris being left in the game was, quote, a lack of communication, end quote. Now, Michigan sideline doctors and Brady Hoke reportedly did not see the hit and did not evaluate Morris immediately for any sign of a concussion. We'll have more of that as the show goes on. And Michigan's 2015 recruiting class took a big hit on Monday evening when its top-rated commitment from Lincolnsville, North Carolina, defensive end Darian Rosborough chose to reopen his process. Now, the 6'4", 283-pounder is the number 42 player nationally and the number 6 defensive tackle. Now, other Michigan commitments, including Avon Old Farms tight end Chris Clark and the number 56 player in the country, have expressed interest in visiting other schools. Well, that's the way things go when the Maize and Blue is struggling on the field. Shane Morris also tweeted at 12:04 p.m. today that, quote, I just want to play football. All right, Dennis Allen was fired Monday evening by the Oakland Raiders. This comes after a loss to the Dolphins, 38-14, the final of that one. And starting off the season 0-4, he's been 8-28 over the course of the past 2 years. Greg Olsen and Tony Sperano are prime candidates to take over as interim coach in the meantime. Well, my Pistons. The Detroit Pistons held their annual media day yesterday as training camp is set to start today. Greg Monroe denied rumors in signing that one-year qualifying offer, meaning that he will be out of Detroit. But he denied it. He said it did not happen. Newly signed backup center Aaron Gray is out of training camp after suffering a cardiac episode. Lions tight end Joseph Fourier's ankle injury has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with his day job. Now, he sprained his ankle, get this, trying to stop his puppy from letting loose in the house. Now, you know what letting loose means, okay? He says, quote, he was about to pee, and I was like, come here, you little nugget. Fourier said Monday at his locker with a boot in his left foot and crutches by his side. He goes on to say, and I was chasing him downstairs. I wasn't running, but I was chasing him downstairs, and I just misstepped, and I reached with my left foot, and it just didn't end up well. Now, he tried to catch himself from falling, but his 265-pound frame was pressured all on that left foot, and he sprained his ankle. Huh, a freak injury there. All right, get well, Joseph, for you. I understand your puppy problems, okay? Trust me, I know. All right, and more NFL news. The Buffalo Bills have benched second-year QB E.J. Manuel after Sunday's 17-23 loss to the Houston Texans. And in a 2-2 start, how about that? Now, former Chicago starter Kyle Orton will get the start. The Royals and Athletics kick off the MLB postseason tonight with the AL wildcard game in Kansas City. The Royals are playing their first playoff game in, get this, 29 years, while Oakland clinched a berth for the third consecutive season. Now, first pitch is set for 8.07 p.m. on TBS. Oakland is sending John Lester on the hill while James Shield will toe the rubber for Kansas City. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this September 30th, 2014. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, yeah, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can follow me at Al Martin WKR on Twitter and also follow the Current Sports Show itself and find out any news, anything you want to know concerning Current Sports by following WKR underscore sports. Well, that's it. Let's get back to the show. All right, folks. Well, we also have a few extended headliners here that I want to bring up for a more local angle, I guess you could say. With the action moving across the Michigan border, Michigan State's men's golf team had its best round of the season with an even par 284 to take the lead at the Notre Dame-hosted Fighting Irish Gridiron Classic on Monday. Now, the Spartans led with a 4-over 572 through two rounds, holding a seven-stroke advantage over second-place Long Beach State. Now, MSU sophomore Charlie Netzel is tied for third at 2-under. Freshman Michael Sharp is tied for fifth, shooting a 143. Now, today's final round returns to the Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame. How about this? In some hockey news, the Bruins have re-signed ex-Spartan Corey Krug. So how about that? That's big news. I tell you what, he's been an unbelievable player for Boston, and I actually used to cover Krug when he was here playing for MSU, so congrats to him. And Michigan State goalkeeper Zach Bennett was named Big Ten Men's Soccer Defensive Player of the Week yesterday following consecutive shutouts against Bowling Green and Rutgers. So how about that? Congrats to Zach Bennett. He's definitely been playing out of his mind. So there you have that. We have a packed show in store for you folks. If you've been following everything that has been going on with this whole Michigan football situation, it is certainly one that's been turning a lot of heads and raising a lot of eyebrows, considering that Michigan, let's just be frank and honest with it, they didn't handle the whole Shane Moore-ish concussion situation the way they should have. Point blank, period. And they are taking a lot of, I guess you could say, jabs for it. Michigan's head coach Brady Hoke, he held his weekly presser yesterday afternoon, addressing the issue. There were a lot of question marks after his presser, so much so that it got national attention. Brady Hoke got bashed by many people, including myself on yesterday's show, considering as though I felt as though it could have been handled in a much different fashion. And Dave Brandon, Michigan's athletic director, felt as though, yeah, he needed to issue a statement because it was really getting out of hand, folks. So he issued a statement around, to be exact, 12:52 a.m. this morning concerning the football program's serious lack of communication that resulted in Shane Morris staying in Saturday's game after suffering a helmet-to-helmet hit. It's a pretty lengthy statement. We're gonna dive into that later on in the show. I want to get your thoughts on it. Again, you know the number to call, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll also talk about the Lions, as Ndamukong Suh has, as ESPN reports, they have found that Ndamukong Suh may have interest elsewhere after this year, and specifically when it comes to the grand old city and destination of New York. How about that? So we'll chat about that as well. And Manny Pacquiao has some interesting comments for Mayweather. Yes, they keep jabbing at each other out of the ring. I wish they'd do it in the ring, but you'll get to hear some interesting comments that Manny Pacquiao had. All of that and so much more, folks. And if you have anything that you want to talk about on the show, again, the number to call is 517-355-9527. You know, and I found this story before we again, I want you guys to stick with us because we have a jam-packed show that also includes two guests. I'll be chatting with Richard Kincaid, who is a Detroit sports broadcaster. Richard is going to give us all things Tigers, as he's been covering the Tigers for quite some time now. He's going to talk about their upcoming series with Baltimore and the overall playoff outlook for the Tigers. And before him, we'll actually have MSU women's soccer goalkeeper Courtney Clem to talk about the MSU women's soccer season and how she's been performing just out of her mind this entire year. So we'll have that. But before we do, I found this story very, very interesting. Now, It was released yesterday that Jovan Belcher, I don't know if that name rings a bell for all of you out there, but Jovan Belcher was actually an American football linebacker who played for the Kansas City Chiefs in the NFL. Now, what really was interesting about Jovan Belcher's story, and very, very sad about this story, was that Jovan Belcher actually took his life. His life, along with his girlfriend's life at the time, he just kind of lost it. You know, a switch triggered inside of his brain, and just he was losing his mind. I believe, you know, looking at more specifically what happened in this story, which took place, I believe, around 2012. 2012 is when this sad ordeal took place. Jovan apparently got into it with his girlfriend, Cassandra Perkins, and they also had at the time a 3-month-old baby named Zoe. But anyway, something happened where, you know, she had went out. I believe it was a Trey Songz concert. Trey Songz is an R&B artist. But anyway, Perkins goes out, you know, to the concert. She returns at 1 a.m. She starts to argue with Jovan about, you know, I guess coming in late and so on and so forth. This whole thing goes on and on and on. They argue back and forth constantly. He leaves the house. Anyway, Belcher returned home between, you know, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, argued again with Perkins, and just completely lost it and shot and killed her in front of also not only the baby, who, again, 3 months old, but also his mother, Cheryl Shepherd. So it's a crazy story. You know, he shot her actually 9 times in the neck, chest, abdomen, hip, back, leg, hand. I mean, horrific stuff. But not only does he do that, he leaves the house. He takes a drive to the Chiefs practice facility next to Arrowhead Stadium. He steps out of the car with a gun to his head. He encountered Chiefs general manager Scott Pelini. Belcher told Pelini that, you know, he had killed his girlfriend, and he thanked him before asking him and Chiefs owner Clark Hunt to take care of his daughter. They try to persuade Belcher to drop the gun. Chiefs head coach Romeo Crennel and linebackers coach Gary Gibbs, they arrive to join the effort to try to convince him not to do anything. Police, they have been dispatched. They start to arrive. And as the sound of sirens approached, Belcher told the men that he had to kill himself and, quote, can't be here. Then he knelt down by the car, and we all know what happened next. So, horrific stuff. Horrific stuff, folks. I remember we're having a brief discussion here on the show about it. And, you know, countless times we've had a discussion about concussions in the game of football. It's something that is so alarming, and it's something that is definitely real. Specifically, when talking about concussions, you'll hear these three words or these three acronyms, or this acronym, I should say, thrown around a lot. CTE. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Now, this is a disease that has been found in many, many people, specifically football players who have sadly taken their lives or have died by natural causes. This is a disease that has been found in the brains of those individuals who have played the game of football for years. It's caused by multiple concussions and multiple damages to the brain itself. And I believe up until now, You cannot know if somebody had CTE until they had died. You can only see it after the brain has been cut in half. And they actually found traces of CTE, found evidence of CTE in Jovan Belcher's brain after cutting it in half, which is really a unbelievable revelation. And, you know, it's opening the discussion now. You know, again, you know, Jovan not only killed himself, but you know, he killed his girlfriend. And but prior to that, they had multiple domestic disputes where he actually put his hands on his girlfriend and so on and so forth. Really, really alarming stuff. But now, you know, we've been talking about domestic violence and Ray Rice and Greg Hardy and so on and so forth here on the show day in and day out. But they're starting to possibly see a link between CTE and domestic violence. Can CTE cause domestic violence? Can it cause an erratic behavior that leads to domestic violence on loved ones? You know, it's really alarming stuff. And with CTE and all of this taking place now, you know, the question is certainly been begged to ask, would you let your child play the game of football? And also another question is asked if fans will care about this whole thing that's happening with domestic violence and with CTE. Will fans care truly about this in the game of football? It's certainly opened the door. So again, folks, we'll be talking about that as well in more depth later on in the show. Again, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKR or at WKR_sports. In the meantime, let's get to one of our guests for today's show. She has certainly been tearing it up on the grass, ladies and gents. She is a goalkeeper for the Michigan State's women's soccer team. Courtney Clem, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, Courtney?
Good. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Truly a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time out today to join me today. Now, I want to dive into your guys' season because right now, you guys have actually started off the Big Ten Conference season at 0-4-1, still winless, still trying to search for that first Big Ten Conference win. Now, you guys really started off the season hot, winning 6 of 7 games. To first harp on the good here, how did you guys come off to a hot start, and what has gone wrong and to go suddenly so cold?
Well, I think that right now we're kind of in a scoring drought. I think that if we start scoring right from the get-go and putting teams on their heels, that's going to help us out a lot. Because overall, we haven't been playing bad. We just haven't been getting that final touch to put the ball away.
Definitely. Now,
I think that'll help us move forward and that'll help us get some wins.
Definitely. Now, you know, starting 0-4-1, I mean, what does the mentality have to be for you guys looking at this season so far? I know you guys are just coming off a loss to, of course, arch rival Michigan. I mean, what has really gone wrong for you guys when really examining it?
I think that we just kind of need to look at these last few games and learn from them and just put them in the past, because there's nothing we can do at this point except for going to practice and focus on turning it around. And I know this week we're going at it tough, and we're going to have a great game Thursday, and I know we're going to start turning things around.
Definitely. Now, you know, looking at the loss to Michigan, 2-1 on Sunday, I mean, it's certainly not good. Of course, in the land of green and white, to fall to the arch rival in the maize and blue in Michigan. Do you feel as though, you know, since you guys have started, you know, the Big Ten Conference season, do you feel like your team has been shell-shocked in any way going from non-conference play to the grind of the Big Ten at all, Courtney?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Have you guys been shell-shocked at all? You know, looking at the because, you know, to be honest, you know, going from non-conference play to Big Ten play, I mean, that's a jump in competition. How has your team kind of struggled in that area to sort of adjust to the level of play?
I don't think that's been the problem. Just we've been hanging in with the competition. We've been losing just by one goal every time, or it's in the last few minutes, so I think it's just laying out and getting that last touch and putting the ball away. And I think if we start scoring, things are going to be turning around for us.
Now, you know, Courtney, you were simply outstanding and have been having a great season so far.
Thank you.
And your guys' last match against Maryland, actually on Sunday afternoon last weekend, a match that resulted in a 0-0 tie. You faced 23 shots, made 6 saves. You picked up your 4th shutout of the season and are now tied for 2nd in the conference in that category. You also continue to lead the league in saves. I mean, how have you been able to do this and do it so consistently?
I definitely have to credit the back line. They've been doing an amazing job and making shots predictable for me, which is huge. So I definitely give them a lot of credit.
Definitely. Now, and earlier this month, you won Defensive Player of the Week honors. For you, back-to-back weeks in the Big Ten, I mean, for you, how do you keep your head out of the clouds, so to speak, or is it easy?
I'm really honored to receive that, but just got to keep looking forward, and we got to figure out how to turn around our season, so we'll get there.
Definitely. And performance, like the way you've been playing so far this year, Courtney, I mean, how does that trickle down to your teammates? I mean, does it kind of force them to step up, and what's the feedback you've been getting from them?
I think that I worked really hard this summer, and I really wanted to have a different season, and I know a lot of us upperclassmen really took that upon us to do that, and you can tell definitely how we came out strong this season, and just we've been playing awesome. It's just we've had some kind of unfortunate breaks.
Yeah,
the last few games.
Definitely. And, you know, looking at the overall spectrum of MSU soccer, I tell you what, the success of the men's soccer program, especially, you know, considering they made it all the way to the Elite Eight last year. I mean, is that, you know, seeing success like that on another playing field, you know, with the men's team, does that push you all to reach that same accolade?
Definitely, definitely. I love going to the men's games and I love learning from them. And I think that we're just right there. We're so close, and we're gonna get our chances, and we're gonna start getting wins. And I know that I have all the confidence in my team to turn it around.
How close are you guys to the men's soccer team?
Pretty close. We hang out with them a lot, and it's really fun. We have a great relationship with them.
How does that help in turn for you guys to be kind of like a mutual beneficial relationship between you to you guys? I'm sure you guys try to motivate each other before each and every game, before each and every outing, right?
Yes, we do. We see them in the training room and passing and everything, and always wishing each other luck and coming out and supporting each other at the games. So it's pretty cool.
All right, Courtney, I got to ask, how in the world did you get involved with soccer in the first place?
When I was really young and I was like fifth grade, someone sought me out on the playground and asked me to come play on the rec team, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And I was originally a field player. But I was kind of shafted to goalie, but I ended up loving it, so it was pretty cool.
Now, I understand that a lot of your family members play soccer. I believe Caitlin Clem, she plays at Wisconsin, am I right?
Yep, it's actually her birthday today.
Oh, get out of here, really? Well, happy birthday to the sis. Gotta love it. And your younger sister, Madison.
I gotta give her the shout out.
There you go. You got to give her a shout out. Hopefully she's listening. I'm probably not, but still. Now, your younger sister, Madison, she's still in high school, right? May she be a goalkeeper, maybe?
Yeah, she is, actually. She's starting to get her recruiting letters, too. So we're really happy for her. And hopefully she'll go somewhere in the Big Ten.
And your cousin, Lauren Clem, I believe she's a goalie at Northwestern, am I right?
Yep. She's been having a great season, too, so I'm happy for her.
I mean, Courtney, it seems to run into Clem blood. I mean, how did that whole thing start?
I don't know. I kind of got thrown into it. My sister was a field player, and then she kind of got thrown into it. So, I mean, we just fell in love with it once we started really practicing and getting into it and setting goals. So,
is there like a family competition between you all?
Yeah, it's pretty friendly, though, I would say.
In what way?
Kind of just motivating each other to achieve our goals, and it's cool that we can go out and practice in the backyard and kind of give each other tips and that kind of thing. So
definitely, without a doubt. All right, well, Courtney, tell us about your upcoming matchup.
On Thursday, we play Iowa.
And is that away or home?
It's home.
It's home.
And I think that'll be a good game for us because they match up with us. They're kind of a similar team. So.
Gotcha. And as far as, you know, like you said, a similar team, in what way is Iowa similar to you guys?
Just that similar formation, and they're very aggressive, and we're very aggressive. And just kind of, they're kind of a defensive style team, and so are we.
Courtney, when you start off a season like you guys have started in the Big Ten, of course, you want to get out of that rut. What's the mentality a team has to have in order to get out of? And is it hard staying positive at all?
You know what? I'm kind of the kind of person that I learn from it and I spit it off and I move on to the next thing. Otherwise, that would be hard for me to actually be goalie if I dwelled on every single goal that went in on me.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the approach that our team has to take right now, and I know we are. Just kind of looking forward to the next game and putting what's in the past, what we can't control, and just moving forward with that.
Definitely. That's all you can do. All right, Courtney, before I let you go, I have to bring up this. And one of your teammates, I believe, made a Twitter account called Courtney Clem's Hair. Is that true? Why did she make this? And what do you think about it?
I'm constantly changing my hair, and I've had all different types of colors and everything. And my teammates kind of laugh at me about that. So I thought it was hilarious when she made the Twitter account. And every couple days, I'll see a new picture on there. It just kind of makes my day.
Really? So is it a wild type of hair? What kind of hair do you have? I haven't seen your hair. I'm sorry.
Right now it's kind of tamed, but I like to, in the games, I like to wear a big bun on top of my head.
Nice.
And
nice.
That's kind of what they laugh at me for, the bun.
Gotcha.
So I think it's awesome. It makes me look taller. So.
Gotta love that, right? That's always good, being a goalkeeper. You gotta, you know, have that persona of just being tall.
Intimidation.
There you go, intimidation. All right, Courtney. Well, there you have MSU women's soccer goalkeeper. I'm sorry, Courtney Klim. Courtney, thanks so much for joining me today, and good luck on against Iowa.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep,
all right, folks, this is our first break. When we come back, I'll be talking with Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster. I tell you, Richard, I mean, he knows all things Detroit sports and more specifically Tigers. You don't want to miss his take on the Tigers as they, it's playoff time, baby, against Baltimore this Thursday. We'll talk about all that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Yeah, everything that I see, I want your high love and emotion. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Reminding you all, if you want to call in and weigh on anything that we talk about here on the show, or if you just have something on your heart, on your little sports heart, if you want to call in and share it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll talk about it, folks. And again, later on, we're, of course, going to be diving into the Dave Brandon release, the press release that he gave around 1 a.m., that he sent out around 1 a.m. concerning how Michigan handled the Shane Morris concussion. It's a story that is getting a lot of attention. Many feel as though Hulk, you know, should have known that, hey, there's something wrong with your player here. You know, he just got, you know, hit pretty hard, helmet to helmet. You know, he got put down pretty hard. He should not be in the game. He should have been released out of the game right after that and been checked out and evaluated. Let's be honest here. Michigan certainly did not handle that situation the way it should have been handled. And they're honestly taking a lot of flack for it. So we'll talk about the statement that that Dave Brandon gave this morning. And we'll also be talking about a little Lions as well later on in the show. So you don't want to miss any of that. But in the meantime, let's get to our second guest on today's Current Sports Show. Now, Richard Kincaid began his sports casting career right here at WKAR Radio, folks. Yes, he's WKAR fam, all right, while he was a student at Michigan State University. Now, while still an undergrad at Michigan State, he began covering the Detroit Tigers for a Lansing radio station and has been covering Detroit sports in Detroit ever since. He was also the play-by-play voice of the Grand Rapids Griffins, which is the Red Wings' top farm club for several seasons. He is the author of two books and, writes the modestly titled website entitled Everybody Wants to Read My Blog. Gotta love that name. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Rich Kincaid. Richard Kincaid, how you doing, Rich?
Pretty good, Al. And just to date myself, to finish the story, the first time I was ever on the air at WKAR, it was because the legendary Bob Kurtz, who had a great career at Nesson and is currently the voice of the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
He had to leave with the Spartans he was a regular WKAR sportscaster, and he had to leave with the football team for a road trip, and they needed somebody to come in and do the sports at 5:45, I think it was. And so they put me in a work study student on that, and that was the first time I was ever on the air.
Wow, first time ever on the air. That's a scenario, and look at you now. You've blossomed into an unbelievable career, Rich.
there's a lot of people can't believe this. Sure.
All right, Rich. Well, we definitely want to talk some Tigers here because, you know, now, you know, the playoffs are here. The Tigers open up their series against Baltimore on Thursday. First of all, were you surprised at all that the Tigers pulled out the AL Central Division Championship by the skin of their teeth?
I think the biggest surprise with the Tigers this year is that they didn't wind up winning the division by 15 games, that it came down to the last game of the season. I think, with all the talk about this team in the preseason, that, playing in a weak division, all the money they'd spent on players, best pitching staff in the American League and all the rest of it. And then when they got off to that great start, when they were 27-12 in May, you just figured they were going to cruise. And then, of course, they had that stretch where they went 9-29 and mm-hmm. and really played a roller coaster ball the rest of the way in. I believe what they finished three games from the point they're 27-12. I think they were three games over 500 the rest of the season. So it was, to me, it was a huge surprise that they found themselves in a pennant race at all. But I suppose all's well that ends well. But the thing I guess I was thinking about is when they made that trade for David Price, and it turns out you know, look at it, he's the guy who literally won the Central Division for them because he's the guy that won the game that got them the division title on Sunday.
Right, that's very true. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there, Rich, that when looking at the Tigers season, and you just talked about it, I mean, that whole nine-game stretch, I mean, where they couldn't even buy a game, I mean, is it a good thing in any way that the Tigers went through the struggle now as opposed to doing it in the playoffs, which can still happen? Which can still happen?
I actually don't think so. I'm just not too aware of championship teams that have had stretches during the regular season. It'll be interesting to find out if anybody's ever done it, because I'm sure Elias will put something out on it should the Tigers go on and win it all. But I don't think there have been very many teams that had a championship season in which they won nine games in essentially a 30-game stretch the way the Tigers did. Now, I know it plants doubts, seeds of doubts, mm-hmm. at any rate, in my mind. I don't know if it does in the case of a professional athlete. They always expect to do well. But, I find it somewhat troubling, sure.
How playoff ready do you really think this team is, Rich?
Well, that actually is the good part here. They've got, what, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday off before they begin the series in Baltimore on Thursday. So that gives them a chance to set up the pitching rotation pretty much however Brad Ausmus wants to set it up. The only guy that won't have full rest come Thursday would be Price, who pitched on Sunday. So however he wants to work this thing, you know, he's at liberty to do that. So I think that that certainly works in Detroit's favor. That's the strength of this ball club, Price and Scherzer. And, well, you know, and now you think about it, too. Mm-hmm. They, you know, that's supposed to be the strength of this ball club. But actually, right, once you get past Price and Scherzer, it's a bit of a question mark, isn't it? Now, Verlander's pitched very well for the past month, but we all know about the troubles he had during the season. And it's still in the back of my mind that this guy said in late August that, you know, his shoulder has been sore this year. He's been hurting physically.
Yeah.
But again, he pitched well in September, and he's a money guy come the playoffs. But, you know, how much of a problem is that shoulder going to be? Porcello, he's been dreadful. One win since August 2nd, right? His last victory came out August 26th.
Yeah, yep, terrible.
He has not looked good. And then, I don't know. And then you're talking about a rookie pitcher in the last slot. So we may find ourselves, oddly enough, in a spot insane and 2 days of rain kind of a situation here. But if Verlander can come through, really, in the come playoff time, if you've got three starters pitching well, then you've got a leg up. And I will say this, too. The Tigers, what was it, last Thursday, the first game of the series against the Twins, the bullpen did not allow a base runner in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. And I will guarantee that if the Tiger bullpen does not allow a base runner past the sixth inning in the postseason this year, the Tigers will be world champions in about a month.
Yeah, and that's the thing I wanted to hit on, because, I mean, the running joke throughout the year was that the Detroit Tigers are the best six-inning team in all of the MLB. Now, you know, we've seen this bullpen struggle multiple times throughout the year, though, Rich. How alarming is the bullpen and closer Joe Nathan, and are there any signs that they will get it together other than this series against the Twins?
No. There really aren't.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole deal. You just have not – every time this team was going great, it turned in the other direction. Every time you figured they were in real trouble, they'd come up and win a big game or win a big series. Remember when the Dodgers came to town? Just a brief two-game series that I believe, if memory serves, well, it was late June, early July, somewhere in that time frame. And it was right after this whole 9-19 thing had come to an end, and the Dodgers, they're riding high. They're cruising in the National League West. And then a lot of people forget also, I mean, the Dodgers won the West going away, but you know, early in the season, actually in late March, they were 7.5 games back of the San Francisco Giants. And then the Dodgers did not look like a good team for the first six weeks, but then, of course, they turned things around. But when they came to town, I thought, geez, you know, they're just going to clobber Detroit. And instead, boom, the Tigers go in and beat them back-to-back. And I think, you know, that actually, to me, it maybe – you know, just a two-game series, but might have turned things around for the Tigers a little bit. But there's been no predicting them at all. Again, when they're playing bad, mm-hmm. you think, you know, they're duff, they turn around, they play great. Then when they're playing great, you think now they're going to cruise and win this thing going away. Then they start playing badly again. I don't know the answer to the question, you know, how that bullpen is going to perform. If you look at it, Soria, you know, he's been a terrific pitcher. He got here and he's had his struggles. Chamberlain, you know, if he's more up than down, that's obviously a good sign. Mm-hmm. The big question mark, as has been from day one, continues to be Joe Nathan in that closer's role. But here you've also got the wild card, Anibal Sanchez, right? They don't want him to re-injure his arm, so he's now a bullpen guy. They say he won't pitch more than two innings in any game. If he can come up big, that just might be the answer. Not unlike Phil Koch a couple of years ago when he was thrust into the closer's role in the postseason, and he responded as well as he did in that series against the New York Yankees.
Yeah, definitely. And looking at, you know, this series with Baltimore, Rich, I mean, it looks as though the rotation would line itself out. You know, if I had to guess, I believe, you know, Max is named. I was talking to one of my interns, and I believe Max Scherzer was named as the starter for game one in Baltimore. And possibly, what is it, you know, David Price, then JV, and then it goes from there, right?
I should think that's what would be how it would go, because again, Price is one day short of full rest. So if they pitch him Friday, he'll be right on his rotation. I would think you'd want to go with Max Scherzer in the opener if Price weren't available. You might take Scherzer over Price anyway. So yeah, the first three games should be set. Verlander would be the obvious choice for game three, but then now you're playing a game again on Monday. And so you're going to have to make a decision. Is it going to be Porcello, or are we going to give the ball to the rookie?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Without, and you know, looking at Baltimore, I mean, just exactly how dangerous is Baltimore, Rich?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, they won that division handily.
They did.
Supposedly was, you know, a tough division, but it's really hard to gauge when you have the Boston Red Sox, the second team in Major League history to follow up a World Championship season with a 90-loss season. I mean, you know, that sort of thing just doesn't figure. They were supposed to be, obviously, they were supposed to be tough again as the defending champions. They weren't. Toronto had a dreadful year. Tampa Bay, they found themselves, what, 18, 20 games under 500 early and then put out a charge and got back to the 500 mark and then fell back again. And the Yankees, you know, they did not have a New York Yankee year. So it was a very, very much a down year in the East. And, you know, you hear people talking all the time about what a weak division the Tigers play. And, I mean, I've been listening to that for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they're like, oh, they like it diminishes the Tigers' accomplishment of winning 4 division titles. But, you know, when you look at the playoffs these past few years, we had 2 teams from the Central Division in the playoffs this year. There were 2 teams from the Central Division in the playoffs last year. You know, it's for me, at any rate, given the fact that all the other teams in the East had 4 years, it's somewhat difficult for me to gauge, you know, how good a ball club the Baltimore Orioles are. The important thing is they're good enough to be in the playoffs, and so plus they've got a home field advantage, so you've got to give them you've got to give them respect. In fact, you may have to say they are the favorites in this series. They've had a terrific bullpen this year. I'll be honest with you, I don't know that much about their starting pitching, but I know that their bullpen's been solid, and obviously they've had enough hitting. They're a good young ball club. They've had enough hitting to get things done. You know what I'm looking forward to tonight, Al, is to be honest with you, I don't like the concept of this one-card play-in game as far as the wild cards.
You don't like it. Why don't you like it?
Because at some point, what's going to happen is you're going to have the first wild card team will be 10 or 12 games better over the course of the season than the second wild card team.
Right.
But it's a Major League Baseball game, and as such, it's any single game is essentially a coin flip as who's going to win. And at some point, some team that will have won 90 games over the course of the season will be playing a team that won 80 games over the course of the regular season, and the 80-win team will pull the upset and win. And it just seems to me to have a 162-game schedule wasted like that, it just
right.
doesn't strike me as right.
It's kind of unfair. Yeah, it's unfair, it seems like, you know, when you boil it down.
And remember last year, both of the number 2 seeds were victorious. Both of the road teams in the wild card games won. Remember that game in Atlanta where they had the but Scott Fisher fall on the infield fly?
Yep. Oh, how can I forget that? Exactly.
Yeah. And Cleveland was the other home team in the wild card, and they got powdered, and they got knocked out of the playoffs in one game. So I'm not sure I'm wild about it. But I'll tell you what, this is certainly an enticing matchup tonight between Oakland and Kansas City in KC, where you can have John Lester talk about trading a guy to win the division.
Yeah.
Getting the start for Oakland up against James Big Game Shields. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I was thinking about this morning. If this were the old days, and I mean like back in the mid-1960s, this game could be scoreless in the 15th inning and both these guys would still be in there. This were back in the pre-pitch count days, I mean, you might see something like that. There was a game, and I think this might be my favorite game in all of Major League history, but a game back in maybe it's 1965, 64, 65, somewhere in there, mm-hmm. where it was Juan Marichal against Warren Spahn. And they were both still in the ballgame. It was scoreless in the 16th inning. And they both must have thrown 300 pitches that night.
That's unbelievable.
You know, you're talking about two pitchers, isn't it? And you're talking about two pitchers there that have long major league careers. So I've always been a little bit dubious of the pitch count, but that's probably because I'm an old-timer. And I mean, seriously, mid-late 1980s, it never even occurred to me to count the pitches that were being thrown. And now it's such a big deal.
That's
why now all teams are only 6-7 inning teams.
Right. I mean, guys, you know, that's kind of the running thing. I feel as though, Rich, and this is me talking, you know, guys have become kind of soft over the years. Am I right?
Well, I think what it is there's so much money involved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you're talking about, well, any top-line pitcher, I mean, guys are getting contracts now for 120 and 140. Well, the Tigers offered Shields $144 million, and it wasn't enough, right?
Right.
You know, we're talking about guys that are making 20, 25, and I think in the case of Clayton Kershaw, $30 million a year or close to it. And there's such an investment there that you're scared to death you're going to ruin the guy's arm or you're going to cost him a season. And I think they err too much on the side of cautiousness, and I think it goes against baseball history itself. Here's the thing that strikes me, and we'll never see it again, kind of deal. But in the World Series of 1968, when I was just a little boy, Game 4 was at Tiger Stadium. It was delayed at the outset by rain. Then the game started. I think in the third inning they had another rain delay,
mm-hmm.
and it rained for over an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh boy!
And it was Bob Gibson against Denny McClain, and St. Louis wound up clubbing the Tigers 10-1 in this game. And in spite of the lopsided score, and in spite of the better than an hour rain delay. The St. Louis starter that day, a guy named Bob Gibson, pitched a complete game.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you would look at that today and say, that is insane.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, that's how the game was. And you still had guys that had pretty long, pretty successful careers, even throwing that many innings and that many pitches. And again, you go back to those days, and instead of a five-man starting rotation, in which each starter gets 4 days rest between starts, it was a four-man rotation, and each starter got 3 days rest. And they were expected to stay out there until they stopped getting guys out. So complete games were not uncommon. You know, there was no such thing as a closer in the 1960s. That's pretty much when that sort of thing started to come into vogue. And now it's just flipped 180 degrees, and it's almost as though a guy like Joe Nathan is on occasion more important than the guy starting the game. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's weird, and I guess in the Tigers' case, it worries me because Joe Nathan, he was one off the major league lead in blown saves this year.
Oh boy, terrible. Joe has certainly been terrible, without a doubt. Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and reporter. He's always insightful. Now, Richard, before I let you go, if you had to give a series prediction on this thing, and even a playoff prediction on this thing. Do you think the Tigers get out of this series with the O's, and how far do they go in the playoffs, if so?
Oh, these best of fives scare you to death. It's bad enough in a best of seven. If you blow a single game, like the Tigers did against the Red Sox last year in game two of the ALCS, you are chasing that game for the rest of the series. Detroit should have come home up in the series 2-0. Instead, now they're tied at a game apiece. And the game that they go into where they're trailing 3-2, they should be leading the series 3-2. If just any little mistake, any little thing can happen, I think it's going to go five. I always think these short series are going to go five. I think it'll be the third year in a row, if it does go five, that the Tigers will be playing an opening round fifth game on the road. You know, they did it against Oakland the last couple of years. Now, they were successful in those, and, you know, they've had success in that situation, but as I look at the thing just being the way baseball is, I fully expect this thing to go five. I would expect that if it does, the Tigers will prevail. But I'm telling you what, it's going to be a good series. That's all there is. It's going to be a good series.
Definitely, without a doubt. All right, Rich, well, I'm staring here. I walked into work this morning, and I went to my mailbox to pick up the latest edition of Sports Illustrated. And, of course, the man that everyone is talking about is Derek Jeter. He is graced the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's walking out, you know, on his own, his solo swan song game, if you will. Do you got a favorite Derek Jeter memory? And what are your thoughts on the fiasco, the Jeter fiasco that's been taking place all year?
Well, it is. I just think I tend to agree with Keith Olbermann, who made that who delivered that commentary, I guess, about 10 days ago.
And
a lot of people think he trashed Derek Jeter, but in my view, all I did was point out the man's statistical accomplishments. And yes, he's had a 20-year career, and he's put up nice numbers. But this has not been Ted Williams retiring. You know, I almost felt like Al Kaline was at the Comerica Park the night they had the ceremony for Derek Jeter. And I wanted to say to Al, hey, so what the Yankees give you when they had your retirement ceremony at Yankee Stadium? And the answer, of course, is they didn't give me a thing because they didn't have any sort of a celebration along those lines. I just think it's been a bitter. I congratulate Derek Jeter on a fine career. I'm sure he's going to be in the Hall of Fame and all the rest of it. But aren't his career numbers more like Frank Biggio's? I mean, seriously. More power to the guy. But it's just been a bit much. Again, this was not Ted Williams or Babe Ruth retiring this year, and I just think maybe they got a little bit carried away on it, especially towards the end. I was getting 6 tweets an hour about what the latest Derek Jeter.
Rich. I hear you. All right, there you have it, Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and reporter. Richard, always a great time, my man.
I enjoyed it, Al. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you for being on. All right. Well, let's hit our second break, ladies and gents. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dave Brandon press release, sum up Ndamukong Suh possibly leaving the Detroit Lions, and Manny Pacquiao feels sorry for Floyd Mayweather. I'll explain. Don't go anywhere. We return in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It's fitting, Alex, that you would play this song right after we get done talking about Derek Jeter, right? Derek Jeter, of course, retiring from the New York Yankees. Have you seen this cover, Alex?
I just saw it when you came in there today.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. It's pretty hot. I like it. As you just heard, Rich Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and reporter. He doesn't like all of the Jeter fiasco. We've been debating that week in and week out. But, Alex, happy Tuesday, my man. You call it Top 40 Tuesday, don't you?
Top 40 Tuesday, Empire State of Mind right there by Jay-Z. Makes sense for Derek Jeter. He's got that state of mind, maybe not fiasco, but some state of mind.
Everybody loves DJ, right? Well, just about everybody. So
except,
all right.
Except Mets fans.
Yeah.
Except Mets fans.
But even in that commercial, you've seen the Jordan commercial, right? He had Red Sox fans saluting him. He had, Mets fans saluting him. Even the Mets mascot saluted him. I mean, everybody. I mean, his personality, that's just DJ for you. So, all right. Well, folks, we have about 10 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything we've talked about today, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Right now, before we wrap up, we have to bring up this. It's the talk of the town. It's what everyone is buzzing about. Michigan football, right? Michigan football has been getting a lot of press, if you will. Negative press, not great press, considering the fact that many people feel as though they handled the whole Shane Morris hit the wrong way, specifically Brady Hoke, and now, of course, athletic director Dave Brandon has also been taking some heat. At 12:52 a.m. this morning, athletic director Dave Brandon released a statement addressing the football program's, quote, serious lack of communication that resulted in Shane Morris staying in Saturday's game after suffering a helmet-to-helmet hit. Now, it's interesting because, you know, have you read the statement at all, Alex? It's really
in-depth. Oh, I read it. It is in-depth.
It is very, very in-depth and sort of outlines and lists the situation, what happened, the thought process behind what happened. And, you know, at the end of meaning that, yeah, there was lack of communication and we really messed up at the end of the day. Now, again, in the fourth quarter, Shane, you know, just reading from the press release here, it says, in the fourth quarter, Shane took a significant hit and stumbled after getting up. From the field level and without the benefit of replays, medical and coaching staffs did not see the hit. Because they did not see the hit, the athletic training staff believed Shane stumbled because of his ankle injury. The team neurologist watching from further down the field also did not see the hit. However, the neurologist with expertise in detecting signs of concussion saw Shane stumble and determined he needed to head down the sideline to evaluate Shane. So that's just an excerpt. I'm not going to go read the whole situation here, but that's just an excerpt behind the thought process in that moment as to why Brady Hoke felt as though Shane was okay and allowed him to play for another play. I don't know if I'm buying it. I see where they're going with this whole thing. It's kind of the only way they can go to sort of, I guess, cover their backs as to why they did what they did or why Brady Hoke did what he did. I truly don't believe that nobody saw, you know, the medical staff or and the coaching staff. I don't believe they did not see that hit, Alex. I'm not buying that. Are you buying that?
I'm actually not buying that. Yeah. And the funny thing that I'm waiting for is in the press conference yesterday, Brady Hoke said that the medical staff will be coming out with some kind of statement. Mm-hmm. You see Dave Brandon here coming out with the statement. You don't see anything from the medical staff. He's saying that, yeah, the neurologist didn't see it, but there's nothing about the medical staff diagnosing his ankle injury and then coming back in the game after they diagnose him. So, yeah, I mean, am I buying that no one didn't see it? I mean, they have TVs all over the booth. I'm surprised no one upstairs. They have all kinds of coordinators up there that could have said something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got Brady Hoke over there on the sideline with no headset. So, of course, you're not going to hear anything when you don't have a headset on, or you're not going to hear about any replays.
Right.
So maybe they should tell Brady to wear a headset rather than implementing a new replay system upstairs.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you bring it up because Brady gets a lot of flack for not wearing a headset, and he actually addressed that at during his afternoon presser yesterday, and he just declined to answer the question. He said, I'm not going to answer that. But, you know, really, again, this statement was issued, and they felt as though it was needed, which it was needed to sort of clean up and to sort of dive into what exactly happened here. But there's really no way to clean this whole thing up now. I think it's sort of beyond the point of return, because looking at how it's ensued and the press has been getting nationally and considering the fact that, man, as a society, we are pretty sensitive about, you know, concussions today. What we know now about concussions, and I sort of, you know, kind of outline, you know, the whole CTE ordeal. I mean, with Javon Belcher, I don't know if you saw that story yesterday. It was broken about Javon, and they saw evidence. He had CTE before, you know, he committed suicide, and before, you know, he went crazy and killed his girlfriend. You know, it's so alarming, and it's such a sensitive topic now, and that has, you know, even embraced debate as to whether or not, you know, parents should allow their kid, their little one, to play the game of football. We're so sensitive as a society that to see a situation like this, where it was obviously neglect on the behalf of the Michigan football staff and Brady Hoke concerning Shane Morris. He should have came out the game. They didn't handle it right. And knowing what we know now of concussions, you are going to get bashed and ridiculed if you do something like this. And frankly, again, looking at Brady Hoke, and I always harp to this, Brady Hoke in his pressers, he looks so confused, so lost. He looks like a beaten man. Right now, it's not a question of if. It's a question of when he's going to be fired, period.
Yeah, seriously. Now, are you surprised, Al, that he's not even fired at this point after Dave Brandon's comments and after the miscommunication?
I am. I'm not.
Why
you
not?
Know, I say I'm not because, you know, looking at it, in a situation like this, you want to make sure you dot all of your I's and cross all of your T's. I think more has to be released as to why, and that's why this statement was put out. You have one side of the statement with Dave Brandon. Of course, there's going to be an investigation that ensues, and more information is going to come out. You want to know all of the information before you jump to a conclusion like this. And now, I think I'm not surprised Brady Hoke hasn't been released yet because, again, we've talked about this on the show. Dave Brandon, you know, this is his hire. Brady Hoke is his guy. This is his major hire for this program. If Brady Hoke goes, I think now Dave Brandon has to go. So now you're not dealing with just one individual here. You're dealing with two, and that sort of makes the complication a little more, the situation, I should say, a little more sticky, and you got to give it a little more time. They're both probably, maybe they both kind of have a foot out the door at this point. You know what I mean? Brady Hoke has his whole body out the door. I would say Dave Brandon has his foot out the door right now. I don't know if he'll come back inside. Who knows? But right now, it's not looking good for him either.
Al, but Brady Hoke completely lied about having conversations with David Brandon. Did you see that?
Yeah,
yesterday at the
yeah.
press conference, he says, I haven't talked to David Brandon. I talked to Shane this morning. He never told me he had a mild concussion. But Dave Brandon comes out today and says he did have a mild concussion. He did talk to the coaches. So Dave Brandon talked to some coaches. Obviously should be the head coach since the head coach is basically the floor general. So for Brady Hoke to come out and say that he didn't hear from David Brandon and then lie about Shane Morris having any concussion injury, that for me is too shady. There are too many holes here.
And doesn't it seem like, you know, and I talk about these two being mutually beneficial for each other. I mean, again, this is Dave Brandon's hire for Brady Hoke. And if anybody is going to fire Brady Hoke, it has to be Dave Brandon. You know, now you're starting to see some separation between the two where Dave is saying, hey, there was lack of communication here. Brady Hoke should have done this, you know, in a way. And, you know, Hoke, as you said in the presser, kind of alluded to, you know, Dave Brandon. I mean, kind of putting him out, you know, that I didn't hear from him, so on and so forth. So they're kind of going against the grain with one another and sort of showing some divide, if you will. And it's going to be a bad situation for both of them in the end, I think.
Yeah, look, here's where I think it really came down to. Somebody knew what happened on the field. Somebody knew that there was a hit and you might have had a concussion. Nobody did anything. So now nobody wants to come out and say, oh, this is the person that knew that didn't do anything. Nobody wants to lose their job because if someone saw it and didn't do anything about it, it clearly states in the NCAA concussion reliability rules that the coaching staff is responsible for any concussions that happen on the field. And the moment that you see something, the player must come out of the game. It's written in the NCAA rules.
Right. And I don't buy that nobody saw the hit. You know what I mean? And I mean, it was replayed on TV, at least. I don't know if it was shown on the Jumbotron at the big house. Obviously, from Brady Hoke's perspective, it wasn't. But even so, I mean, you saw Shane kind of get up with a limp. I mean, looking at that whole video again, I mean, he kind of looked out of it to a degree. I mean, he had one of his teammates come over and put an arm around him. Seeing that alone, I mean, take them out. Take them out the game, you know? I just don't get it. Right now, they're just trying to cover their backs and trying to clean up this whole mess.
Right.
And it's just getting sloppier and sloppier.
Now, if Michigan loses at Rutgers,
oh,
do you think it changes him staying to the end of the season, or do you think it's over?
Oh, I think it's over. I think if this continues on and on, the losses on and on and on, something has to be done before the season.
Right.
It's getting to that point.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we didn't even fathom that there would be a situation like this to pile on the fact that this isn't a good football team. This is a situation outside of that fact that they're a bad football team and something like this happens.
Yeah.
It's piling on now.
Right, right.
It's getting to the point where it's like, okay, you know, it's like, you know, I do this all the time. My garbage overpiles sometimes and starts to trickle out and run on the floor. It's getting to that point now. You got to take the garbage out, and the garbage may be taken out before the season ends, Alex. So there we have that, folks. We're out of time. I want to give a special thanks and shout out to all of you out there who tuned in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. I want to remind you all that Current Sports TV tapes tomorrow when I sit down with the general manager and owner of the Capital City Stealth, Lansing's minor league football team. That's right, Robert Huntoon will be joining me. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, simply go to WKAR.org to sign up online for free. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Tuesday. And as always, be easy, people.